Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome. This is Tario 24/7 at UNC Basketball Podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the channel. I want to welcome me and my guy, Isaac Trotter. We can just call you a guest of the show, but more like a key cog in the show. Is that okay?
I'll take it. Yeah, no, okay. I'll take it. I'm kind of like the sixth man. I just come off the bench when you need me. At time. Get my 22 minutes a game.
Best sixth man in the game. So I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. So let's get right into it. Wake Forest, UNC, they had it in control, obviously. And what happened? Talk to me.
Interesting. You know, I think Wake is really good. That was kind of one of the things that I kind of took away from that. I feel like Wake is really undervalued right now. I think their offense is starting to hum a little bit. I don't know if people really know this, but Nick Friedman's like a former NBA type of guy. Like, he's been in the mix there in the NBA, really good offensive coordinator. So I think Wake Forest, that win's actually going to age pretty well because Wake's going to get a lot better. But I thought that this was a bit of an interesting look at how Hubert Davis is viewing this roster right now. Luka gets taken out of the rotation. Honestly, the guard play like gets really revamped. I think we even saw, you know, Isaiah Dennis gets checked into a game because they blew a couple switches. So it's feels a little bit like, and Carolina's like a lot of other teams right now, it feels like Carolina's kind of searching. It feels like they know they have three guys that they really trust, and Caleb and Henry and Seth. And after that, it feels like a free-for-all of who are their next two guys on a game-to-game basis. So good win. You know, I think they showed a little bit of what I like about this team. And they also showed a little bit of our hesitancies about this team all in one 40-minute game. And you just find a way to survive and advance and move on.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, perimeter is a concern. I mean, Kyle Meese and Harris almost had 60 points combined. Kyle Meese had 9 assists. So I think more so matchup perimeter-wise is what he's searching for defensively and offensively. And, you know, with Young and Powell and Dixon, like you said, you kind of just – I think he just kind of, hey, whoever's going to play the best, which from a player's perspective, that sucks. I don't like that because you don't know when your minutes are coming or going. But I guess it is what it is until someone establishes himself.
No, it's a good point. And I understood it because their switching was bad, Carolina's was. They blew a ton of switches. I was watching the game last night to prep for this, and I was trying to count how many switches they were busting, and it was over and over again. And the thing is it wasn't just one guy. Like, it was Seth and Caleb blew a switch, and Juke Harris got an open three. And Juke Harris is turning into be like maybe an NBA player eventually. Like, he's a really, really good wing. Like, he's the number one guy in the scouting report. Like, why is that happening? You know, Seth and Kyan busted switches late in the end of the first half. Hubert goes right to Isaiah Dennis to get him in the game and get Kyan out. Like, those are those little things where it like feels like the talking, the connectiveness of this defense still have a ways to go. I think this defense can be really good. Like, Caleb and Henry together is a really good formidable front line. Like, Seth is a good individual defender, but it kind of reminds me of like that weak link theory we talk about, especially in the NBA. Like, your defense is only as good as the weakest link on the floor. And for right now, it feels like Carolina is searching to find like that our fifth best defender. Can we find someone who's not making mistakes? And so far, like, especially in that game and after the SMU game, it's like those mistakes have started to compound a little bit.
And thank God, you know, Miles Colvin decided not to show up. I mean, because he's their second leading scorer, right? So, right. I mean, obviously, Kyle Meese and Harris picked it up, but, you know, it got sketchy at the end. And, you know, Wake Forest, they lost to Michigan by one, Texas Tech by one.
They're so good,
I thought the same thing. I was like, okay, like, this is not a team you're just going to be able to just walk over.
One thing I thought was interesting, though, too, is like, even if when the whole lead evaporates, it's like, it's so funny how often it feels like Caleb Wilson and Henry Vassar just playing hard, like, saves them. It's like, it's a 1-point game late in the game. Like, it's under four timeout. Wake Forest has all the momentum. and this play is dead, and Caleb Wilson comes out of nowhere to save the possession, gets on the floor for a loose ball, gets a foul, gets to the free throw line. Next one, Henry walls up against Kalmis, switches onto a point guard, shuts him down, forces a bad shot, or forces a turnover. Seth takes the other way and dunks it on somebody's head. Like, it's like those little things between their best two players are really changing the landscape of this team. And when they need them, it feels like hustle plays from their best two guys are kind of saving them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't worry about the interior. I worry about the perimeter. And you know, we can even dive into the Bogovic kind of scenario. You know, what do you think is happening there? Do you think it was a blip in the radar? Or do you feel like, hey, maybe this is something that's going to sustain until, I mean, she gets better defensively? I mean, let's call it how we see it.
Yeah, I think it might be some of that. You know, a part of me, I think of, like, is Carolina's best defensive lineup include him? I don't think so. Does Carolina's best rebounding lineup include him? I don't think so. And so then the offense has to be really, really good to make up for it. And so far, it just kind of hasn't. You know, I looked this up. You know, against top 100 teams, when Luka's on the floor, Carolina has a negative 11 net rating. When he's off the floor, they have a plus 13 net rating. So, like, they're just better without him against the better teams. And that just is what it is. This team has depth. Like, they have a lot of different guys that I think can play. And so I don't think that they're in a position where they're forced to play Luka. And that's kind of the reality of the situation right now. I still think he can help this team. You know, he's a vet. I expect him as an older guy to find a way. This is not the first valley that he's been through in his career. I'm sure that he will find a way to get out of it. And I think he can help them because he can give them, like, some of that secondary creation. We've seen him be able to make shots. We've seen him be able to get 2 feet into the paint at times using his pace, even though he's not the most explosive. And I think some of his off-ball defense at times has been okay. But it feels like until he can actually kind of really get up to speed here, like, they're just going to play other guys, because it feels like the drop-off between – or there is no drop-off. And actually, you in the numbers, the metrics say you're getting better when he goes to the bench right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, just from a kind of eye test perspective, you know, even not analytic, if you're just watching the game, you're just kind of more connected and more sturdy with him not playing, unfortunately. And then you have Jaden Young coming up the rear, right? It's like, which I, when I see him out there, like, I'm just, like I said, I'm an eye guy. Like, I watch the game. You know, I love analytics. I use them a lot, but I watch it. He looks like he belongs, right? His movements, how he plays, how he understands the game, his feel. Like, I personally think he could probably creep into that rotation more than anyone within the next couple of weeks with, you know, how he's been playing and how he's played.
Unafraid. That was the word that I wrote down with him. Like, he's just completely fearless. Yep. And, you know, when you're making open shots and you're guarding at the point of attack, I think they've done a good job of keeping it pretty simple for him. They're not, like, throwing a ton on his plate right now. He can help you as a secondary option. And, no, I think last year, like, at Virginia Tech, he obviously had so much tossed onto his plate, right? Like, he just was carrying a huge, huge load. But in a smaller role, 18, 20 minutes a game, I think he feels like he's an ACC type of player, like, because he's been at that. You know what I mean? Like, so scaling down from that high usage role into what he's doing right now, it does make sense. And yeah, like I said earlier, it feels like this staff is just searching for guys to make open shots and not make mistakes defensively. And Jaden made open threes against Wake. I thought he was okay defensively. I didn't really notice him, but I also didn't notice him in a bad way, if that makes sense. And that means probably more minutes kind of seeding his direction, because, I mean, here's the other thing too. Like, he also had a really nice read on that one of those pick and rolls too. Like, he's played with the ball in his hands. Like, he had a nice read, found Vesar for on that empty side pick and roll. Vesar goes in. I think he got an old fashioned 3-point play on that one, or maybe just a layup. I can't remember exactly, but, like, he is a guy that theoretically could run ball screens on the second side of the floor, because he did a ton of ball screens for Virginia Tech last year.
Yeah. You know, you forget, like, you know, he was thrown into a fire. So, like, him coming in against Wake Forest, like, it's not going to rattle him, right? Like, I played in Virginia Tech last year. A lot was asked of me. I was thrown into the fire. Probably didn't have the best year numbers-wise. Like, don't care. Like, let's do it. So, I'm excited to see, you know, where this team goes. Because, like, what team right now is still evolving? Like, this is going to be so interesting to see where we go. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have to establish, in my opinion, and I played before, a solid 7-8 guy rotation. You know what your minutes are going to be. You know what you're going to do. Because I say this to the day I die. I was a guy, role playing in the NBA, came off the bench, started some years. When I didn't know when I was going to play or when I was coming out, it sucked. And it affected my performance because that's just another thing you mentally have to think about. So down the stretch, I would say, like, what do you think? I'm just you know, your crystal ball. 7-man rotation when it comes time. Hey, second weekend, you know, 32 teams left. Who you got starting and who's your two guys off the bench? Because that's what's going to happen. I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be about 7.5 guys.
Okay. I think for me, it's Caleb, Henry, Seth. I still think Kyan deserves that chance because I think he'll make open shots. And I like the way he's moved the ball at times lately, too. He's unselfish. I like what Jaren's given him for the most part. You know, he's not a star, but, like, they rebound really well when Jaren's at the three. I think they're 99th percentile nationally in offensive rebound rate when Jaren, Caleb, and Henry are on the floor together and top against top 100 teams. So, like, I think he's part of that group. I don't know who my seven is. I think Dixon is probably – he's probably, like, one of my man crush guys. Like, I just really like his feel. I think that he'd probably be part of it. I don't know. I think it really just comes down to which guy, Jaden, Jonathan Powell, or Lucas making shots. It really does. Like, that's kind of how it feels like because they need a shot maker bad. And, like, you know, this pick and roll offense isn't good enough right now. Like, it's one of the worst pick and roll offenses in the ACC. I think a lot this team's strength is high low, mid post back downs, obviously transition. I think they move it pretty well when they play through their bigs and start to when they draw two, when Caleb draws two or Henry draws two, stuff like that. But this pick and roll offense isn't playing at a high enough level. And so whoever one of these secondary guards can run pick and rolls, not make mistakes, make open shots, I think that kind of is the differentiator. Gun to my head, I do think Luka finds a way to work his way back into this mix, but Dixon and Powell and Young and Luka, like, all, of those four guys, it feels like it could be two of the four, and you could pick a different two every single game and find a way to work.
Yeah, it's kind of scary when you say the pick-and-roll offense, right? Like, you got two guys who I think at the professional level are, like, would be amazing pick-and-roll guys. If Vesar and Wilson, like, you know, if there was kind of more of an emphasis on the pick and roll and getting downhill, but they figure it out. High, like you said, high lows, offensive rebounds. It'll be interesting.
That's the thing too. It doesn't feel like this offense is playing well, but, like, your star plays so hard that it doesn't matter. Like, he just plays so hard. And Caleb has been, you know, I'd like to kind of throw this comp at you. One of my scouting buddies comped him to Blake Griffin. And I was like, that's a really interesting comp with how they used him at Oklahoma and with how he's being used at Carolina. And it's just the effort and the energy and just the motor is basically keeping this offense afloat because of the offensive rebounding.
And it's such a, you know, I hate, you know, I was watching it. Where was I watching it at? And someone that I work with was throwing out the comp. Oh, Wally Szczerbiak, right? I was watching it. I was in the studio this weekend. And he was like, you know, I played with KG. He moves like him. He's like a little KG in him, you know. So
I love that.
Yeah, and so he was like, just the way he's moving, how fluid he is, his bounciness, like how he plays. Like, he's like, he reminds me of him so much. And then I love the Blake comp because, you know, his athleticism, I would put him in the 1% of the 1%. Like, you know, the Amen Thompson type athleticism, just the way he jumps and moves. So – and Blake developed a game. Blake developed kind of a game. And, he wasn't like this super, super skilled guy, but he was just so explosive coming down the lane. He could pass. He's developed a little jumper. So I love that comp. Blake Griffin, KG, kind of – that's a crazy comp right there.
It really is. It really is. And to kind of tie it back together, I'm, like, looking at this ACC, and there are so many teams like Carolina who have no idea who their best five players are right now. Duke still doesn't know who their best. They just changed their starting lineup again. They put Malik Brown in at the four. They're playing Dame Sarr at the three. You know, NC State has been all over the place with their lineups and who's playing this day and who's not. You know, Syracuse is trying to figure it out. Clemson, I think, kind of knows who they are, but they're a little limited sometimes as well too. It's just you go down the list of these ACC teams outside of Virginia and maybe Miami. There's so many teams are still trying to figure out their identity, and that's where it's like that's where you have like an opportunity if you're Carolina to like make some hay if you can take care of business, because there's so many the league is obviously better, but I don't think that like there's a juggernaut up top. Like, is anyone watching Duke and being like, man, they're unbeatable? No. Like, nobody's watching them right now, like, and thinking that. Like, there isn't some, like, alpha team, I think, this year that's going to run away and win, you know, 16 ACC games. So, if you can figure out your identity first and you can figure out your best lineup first and you can start humming a little bit, I do think that opens up a chance to really make a move in this ACC that's honestly a little bit more wide open than I think some of the predictive metrics would assume. I think Duke's, like, minus 500 to win the ACC right now. I'm not fully there yet with that group.
I should something. I'm about to check out that future. I mean, it's taking the pro model, right? Like, this is the NBA, right? Like,
yep.
Okay, 15 games in, what lineups suck? What lineups are good? Who's been playing well? Who has been playing well? Because, you know, a coach I talked to, I forget, they all run together, but he said, look, like, Frank Martin from UMass. He's like, look, I didn't even – like, the way this goes now, I don't even know what I have until they go out there and play, because they run your guys. I don't – you know, so he's like, I don't know how guys are going to react to adversity or this happens in the game. So, literally, like, I'm throwing the guys out there, and I have to adjust from there. So, I think we're going to just – that's what we're going to see now with college basketball, and it is what it is.
It's a great point, and I do think that patience is really required for some of these transfers. I think there's a long list of transfers of, like, that mid-year surge we see from them where, like, hey, they're still kind of figuring things out, but, like, by January-ish, they start to figure it out. Like, I would not be surprised if it's, like, if Kyan starts to – if things start to click for him in the next little bit, you know, or someone like maybe it is, maybe this is the clicking is already happening, like we're seeing for Jaden Young. Like that happens with transfers especially. So it's a great point, like, hey, I don't know who my team is, but also, like, my team can really evolve and change, to the tenor of the entire group can change by January because a certain guy emerges and you kind of figure out what works. And that feels like the biggest X factor. It feels like you have such a high floor with Henry and Caleb and how awesome both of those two dudes have been, and what else can you say about them? They're just terrific. And Seth's been really good when he's been healthy. But the X factor for this group is how these newcomers kind of gel here. And if they can reach the peak of their powers here in January and parlay that into March.
Look, it took me a year. I sat down, I watched, and then Ed David gets hurt. Then I got another probably 3 or 4 months of just starting and playing and learning. And then the sophomore year is kind of when I took off. So for a guy to come in and do it in, what, 3 or 4 months and become like a cog and understand a system, like, I don't envy that. I don't think I would have been as great without my time just sitting and watching and being able to work my way in. So good luck to those guys out there. It's a different day and age. We're going to preview Stanford now. So talk to me about this Stanford team. What do you like or what do you think could be some of the slip-ups for a team that you know, is on paper, they don't jump out at you, but they do some things that are pretty good, and hence is, I'll get into it, why they upset Louisville.
So this is not one of the most talented rosters in the ACC, but Kyle Smith is like one of the best program elevators. He just maximizes them, and it starts with Ibuka Okorie. Like, I think he's an all-freshman team lock. He's been phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal. He draws 7 fouls per 40 minutes, so your perimeter defense will be tested there. You cannot foul this dude. He's so slippery, so aggressive. He can take over a game too, like, especially against Virginia Tech. If he just – he put the entire team on his back. It was bucket after bucket after bucket down the stretch, and he really is the head of the snake for this group, and you have to take him out to have a chance. I do think Carolina does match up decently well with him. You know, I think – against teams with elite size in the front court, that could be something where he could get a little bit tripped up. I think Seth is going to be relishing this opportunity to go one-on-one against him. I would ditch the switching if I was Carolina. We'll see what they end up doing, but I'd ditch it. Like, just ditch the switching, lock in, play man-to-man, and let Seth hound a freshman for however long he's on the floor and make his life a living hell. And from that point on, you know, I think, you know, Stanford's a not the hugest team. They're big, they're physical in some spots. Like Chisholm Okpara is like 6'8", 240. AJ Rossi is about 6'9", 230, but they don't have elite size inside. And their offense can get really bogged down. Like Notre Dame, like really gapped them up, played tough, smart, connected defense in 147-40.
Yeah, that's a nasty. I haven't seen a 47-40 or I don't know how long.
I would have to check that. Like, I feel like I can remember a game in the Big Ten where Penn State scored like 33, like 15 years ago. And I think that's about it. Like, that's the only thing I could think of too. So this is a Stanford team that's, I mean, Carolina's probably has four of the best five players on the floor at all times, I would say.
Yeah.
So like, you have to go out and win that game, and you just have to, there's no excuse.
Yeah. You know, I kind of was looking at some of the metrics. I mean, they take care of the ball at a high level, yep, and they turn you over. You know, they're one of the top teams nationally in steals, and they guard the 3-point line really well. So there's your formula, right? Like, you guard the three, you take care of the ball, and you turn teams over. That's how you win. I would not be surprised if I went to his office. He's like, look, it's right there on the board. That's what we want to do. So, you know, that's how Louisville lost. They were 6 of 27 from three, and Stanford was 9 of 19. And if you look at these upsets, like Wisconsin and Michigan, I mean, they had like the greatest 7-minute stretch I've ever seen in basketball of shot making, right? Like, so Stanford's gonna have to hit some threes, and you know, Carolina's gonna have to take care of the ball and not turn the ball over. And defensive wise, they're low in ranking of their 2-point percentage defensively. So teams need to talk about their size. So I think we have to utilize that. Take care of the size, go inside. Don't fall in love with the three, because they're really good at guarding the 3-point line too. So, hey, give it to your big fellas and you go from there. I think this game is theirs to take.
I think you can run on them too. And I think that's what Carolina has to do. If you can run on them, get them out and speed them up a little bit, I think that's when Carolina can be good. If Carolina gets 13 to 15 points in transition in this game, now Kyle Smith's not going to let that up easy. He's really good at trying to control that. But if they can get 13 to 15 points in transition, I think that's a big difference maker.
And, I mean, quiet as kept, we don't talk about this a lot. Number three in average height in the country. So I think Carolina's got to be a team that, hey, look, we need to start imposing our will. Like, we understand we want the perimeter shot, but we need to attack the rim, get at the rim, use the big fellas. I haven't seen a turn five yet this year, but we need a couple turn fives. You know what I'm saying? Get the post up. So I'm not worried about Stanford per se. But let's jump to the next game, Cal, which I think is really good. So talk to me about them.
They have sneaky grit, good talent. Like Day-Day Ames, like we know the familiar name to ACC people who can really play. Justin Pippen was a pretty good recruit out of high school, went to Michigan, didn't do much last year, and has had a nice year. But John Camden, former ACC type of guy, has been pretty good for them. Chris Bell, obviously at Syracuse, has been pretty good for them. They take and make a ton of threes. Like, they are one of the high-volume three-point shooting teams. I think that's where you start with the scout, is like, we're going to run them off the three-point stripe. They play with great pace. You know, I think Mark Madsen's a pretty good offensive coach, but they are going to have four shooters on the floor basically at all times, and they're high-volume guys. Like, Camden will get them up. He'll take 8 to 10 in a game if you let him. Chris Bell will get them up. He'll take 8 to 10 in a game if you let him. Pippen and Ames can get them up. And so this is a game where I actually do think you're switching. I don't think switching against Stanford works. I do think switching against Cal could definitely be effective, just to keep them on the perimeter, limit driving lanes, limit those driving kicks that they really want to get to. This is a tough game though, and it's a big week for Cal overall, because Cal gets Duke and Carolina at home this week. Like, they need one of these bad. They need one of these bad. So you know, it's not a must-win spot for Cal, because every game's big for Cal at this point. They just don't get many opportunities of these huge games at home. But for Carolina, too, one thing I would just stress is I was looking at wins above bubble, which is this new metric that, like, is in play for the NCAA tournament seeding committee. Road wins are, like, absolute freaking gold for wins above bubble. So this week you get Stanford and Cal on the road. Like, yes, it doesn't sound big. It's not, they're not top 25 games. They're not going to be like these huge, like, oh, quad one games, but road wins for wins above bubble are really, really valuable to boosting your metrics. And this is where Carolina can make some real hay. They could jump a seed line if they go undefeated this week, which makes this Cal game super, super important.
Listen, if Cal, because Cal's got Duke on Wednesday, right? So Cal beats Duke, right? This turns to a quad one win or quad one opportunity for Carolina. Totally. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen, but Cal's right on the edge of that, like you said, making noise. So it's going to be a tough team. I think when I look at the game and look at Cal, look at Carolina, I think the story of the game is going to be first shot defense. Because Cal's one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the country. So they don't board, right? So the first shot defense will, I think, determine this game. And it's as simple as that. Guard your yard, whatever the scheme is. Don't let them take open threes and board. If you can do that, I think you've got a good chance to beat this team. Because another thing they do, they're one of the top teams in not turning over too, right? So they get the possessions, and as you said before, they like to shoot threes, and that's always scary when you're playing a team that we would prefer twos, right?
Right. So, well, their interior defense is also pretty manageable. You know, I'm trying to figure out, like, who's guarding Caleb. I think it's probably Camden, and he's like, you know, 6'7"-ish, 220. He is not Caleb Wilson levels of athlete. So, like, you know, in that Kansas State game earlier this year, Kansas State shot 70% on twos against Cal. So, like, and they were able to get out and run on them as well, too. Now, part of that, I think, with Cal overall is the reason why they don't chase offensive rebounds is, one, their personnel isn't great, but, two, they do not want to give up transition points. So it's like a little bit of tied together there. But I really do think Carolina can overwhelm them inside, and that has to be – that has to be the recipe, because this Cal team, it just has to. And all those long threes have to be runouts on the other end. I don't care. If they're going to take a bunch of contested threes, runouts, and get out and go. Move the ball, push ahead passes and transition. You can get open shots, and you have to overwhelm them in the paint. If Carolina's taking 35, 43s in this game, I think that they're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm looking at kind of their little KenPom stuff. I mean, their average two-point distance the defense allows is 300th in the country. So you're able to get – they allow stuff close to the basket. So, you know, if I was sitting in the scouting with Coach Davis, I'd say, look, we're going to pound the ball inside until we can't anymore, and that's just going to open everything. Hey, old school Carolina. Let me tell you something. If they ran secondary break against a team like Cal, now I'm just kind of looking at it, it would be over, because it's a transition – offense kind of ran by the big. I don't know if you knew that, but the big decides, not anymore, but the big decides what happens, right? Catch it at the top, you kick it back to the point guard. That's a pick and roll for me, like a lob. Like, so.
I didn't know that.
Secondary transition, for the people that don't know, the big runs that, right? So, for instance, if I didn't get enough touches or I feel like I didn't get the ball, if I swing back to the guard, it's called kickback, and that's a pick and roll or a lob for me. So, like, that is something that's kind of cool. I wish they would implement, because think about Caleb Wilson's secondary break. Like, he's able to say, okay, I'm going to do a pick and roll on this side. Okay, if I swing this side and I cut through the lane, it's a post-up for the opposite big. So, like, you know, you could play around a little bit. So just a little excerpt inside of that for the folks at home.
I do think that the Wake game plan could getting to see an offense like Wake could help you against Cal. I do think that's something I was thinking of too. And so all of those little mistakes in the switches that we were talking about, those busted switches, are going to have to be shored up. And Caleb's off-ball defense will be tested in this game too. That's one other thing about him that I noticed. He looked, I don't know if you thought this, but he looked tired for like the first time I ever thought, like, this year against Wake. Just a little slow on some of the off-ball stuff, and they were able to get some open threes against him when he just kind of got caught ball watching a couple times. You can't ball watch against Cal, because he's going to be matched up against Bell or Camden, who are legit killers now from outside. So those are some extra little scouting nuggets that I noticed from watching Cal a few times this year.
Yeah, I mean, these two teams are similarly rated in the KenPom Bible. And, you know, K- KenPom, which I look at, it's good reference. I mean, they've got them only winning by two and then three with Cal. So
road wins are hard.
Yeah, usually he's not that far off. So and going out to the West, we know what happens. Look, we know what happens when those teams go out to the East, right? Like it's I was talking to someone, this is kind of off topic, but like the records of like USC and those schools in the Big Ten from coming over, it's like it's kind of scary.
Rothstein's been big on this. He does not think that USC, UCLA, Oregon, or Washington will ever win the Big Ten because
Rothstein. So I worked with him this weekend. He was that's the guy that was like, look, like there's no chance. Like it's brutal.
Yeah, it is, and that's why these West Coast trips, like. It is more manageable for the East Coast teams going over there because you're not doing it over and over again. So like, but they're huge. Like they're just they can kind of make or break your. I think this week sneakily could make or break Carolina's chances to win the ACC because I think if you go 2-0 this week, that does really set the stage for you to make a serious run. Here's one other little thing I was looking up too. I think Carolina's like a little undervalued in because of 3-point variance, which is a hot button topic, but like against top 100 teams this year, Carolina's shooting 31% from three and their opponents are at 39%. That's a crazy gap. That's an 8-point gap right there. You would expect that to level out a little bit, if not flip at times. And if that happens, if this is the week where some of the 3-point variance gods are on Carolina's side, I do think it's a scenario where you could see this team start to be power rated a little bit higher. Because you're right, the predictive metrics aren't in love with this team. Like, KenPom has them, what, like 33rd, I think?
Which I think is this. I understand the metrics and I understand this. And I believe in it. I mean, KenPom is usually right? Like, they're not off. But, you know, I just – this team, a 14-2, 2-1 in ACC team, like, with some really big-time wins on the road for a couple of them, right? Like – you can't tell me this is not like a top 20-ish type team.
That's what I'm saying. And I think the 2-point gap that Carolina has is more actually predictive of what's to come. Like they're shooting 58% on twos. Their opponents are at 42.8%. That's a huge gap, 15 percentage points. That's one of the best in the country. I think that's more predictive of the future, not like this big gap that we're seeing on the opposite end in threes. I think the threes is more just kind of happenstance, a bad fortune so far, to be honest, in that regard. And if that starts to come back their way and they're able to just maintain what they're doing as a 2-point offense and defense, I would expect the predictives to start thinking of Carolina as like a top 20 team too.
Yeah, I mean, top 40, literally both ranked 40 in offenses and defense adjusted efficiency. So I think there's definitely room for improvement. So look, man, ain't gonna take much of your time. I'm headed to Utah in a little bit. So I appreciate you coming on. Per usual, love the insight. Love the analysis that you bring, man. And, you know, have a good week and weekend.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. Big week.
Yes, sir. As always, thank you for watching on YouTube and listening wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out TarHill247.com for the latest wall-to-wall coverage of Carolina Athletics.